Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Rocket Mortgage. Confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Neil deGrasse Tyson, with Gina Grad on news and Walt Bryan on sound effects. And now, a man who's had as many issues with validation for his parking as he's had with validation from his parents, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on, mandate. Get it on, man. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for sharing all those good news that you got for us. And we'll see you coming up this Sunday. Oxnard, Levity Live, 7 o'clock show. And we'll have
Doug Benson
up on stage with us. All right. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian. Let me just take my underpants off.
Whoa, these mics are hot.
All right. Look, we've had disagreements on food in the past in the show, but I think we're all going to come together.
Comes to an end today.
It comes to an end to it today. I think we're going to come together.
Getting our tongues cut out.
Your stomach.
Served on a taco.
Salsa water's too much for your stomach. You and Sarah Silverman.
That was funny.
The only two people I've ever met. Okay. Now, here's where it all ends. I was out to dinner last night. Vegetable medley to me sounds like trail mix or Fiesta mix. Yeah. I don't want mix. I want peanuts or I want cashews or I want smoky almonds. When I hear Fiesta or medley, that's not good for the music. It's not good for the vegetables. It's not good for the trail mix. It's just, it's always bad. It always means cop out.
And you're also not getting the first round draft picks of vegetables. You're not getting asparagus tips. You're not getting Brussels.
It's everything nobody wanted.
Right. Right. So can we just do this?
Hey, peas and carrots. Here you go.
It's a lot worse than that. I would have blown a guy for peas and carrots. I ordered something and they said, you want the mashed potatoes on the side? And I said, could I have the broccoli? Oh. And they said, oh, it comes with a vegetable medley. And she sort of turned around. Nope. Never again. It was a big mistake because
soggy
I got
cauliflower.
I would have blown Neil deGrasse Tyson for that. Wait, what'd you say?
You got ab broccoli.
Right.
Probably mixed it with a whole bunch of other crap.
I got a couple pieces of broccoli, and the rest were huge, mealy chunks of summer squash. The tasteless briquettes of summer squash. Yeah. The thick cut, just large, big, fat medallions of one zucchini and then one summer squash. Now, zucchini
dice
has
size
no
squares.
Flavor. Oh, not dice size. Big chunks. Mm. Big
like a log.
Slabs. Big, where they take
worse.
The thing, the thing's already big, and then they slice it sort of diagonally. So it's 3/8 of an inch thick, but it's 2 inches long.
Yeah.
And it's this big, flat coaster.
Sad Julia.
Mealy, nothing, zero. It's just, it's a sort of a fiber binder for water. Like, it's a nothing thing. And then this, I was eating with six guys, so I picked out all of the broccoli.
All the one piece.
And I said, here's what I'm left with. I was left with these huge chunks of the zucchini's bad, but the summer squash is like zucchini's boring brother. Mm-hmm. Like if zucchini had a less talkative, more boring brother, that would be the summer squash. Because this is completely tasteless. It's colorless. It's nothing. It's just
mushy.
It's mushy and it's too hard at the same time. And the way they cut it is, if you take this thing that's 2 inches around and you hit it at an angle, you have these huge chips, thick, big, mealy chips. They dominate the plate, of course. And I then said to everyone at the table, you know, I asked for the zucchini, but I got the medley, and this is what I got. And they just went, you got screwed, dude. Indicating to me that nobody really likes this. Like, is there anybody who I'd like? I don't want your zucchini mix, the one that is rolled in butter and bacon
cream.
Bits, and you can only be eaten, it can only be consumed when someone's performing fellatio on you, and you have to be within a stone's throw of the Mediterranean. No, I'm just talking about steamed chunks of vegetables.
It's the adult version of fruit cup, which is the thing you would pull off as a kid. It would just be kind of like syrupy fruit that no one wanted. Pear bits.
Yes, pear bits. They're also couldn't even support their own weight as you tried to pick them out of the fruit cup.
They don't even register.
Well, here's what I'm saying. So I said to Matt, I want to get to the bottom of this. I want to know what's going on. I want to know how much broccoli is a pound, and I want to know how much zucchini is a pound, I want to know how much summer squash is a pound. And he said broccoli is about $3 a pound.
Okay.
And he said that the zooks and the summer squash is about $2 a pound. And then I yelled, aha, and I threw my phone down. But then he told me that the...
You still there, boss?
The broccoli florets... Am I saying that right?
Yeah, just the
floret.
Just the flowering.
He said, that's the same price, $189 or whatever it is. Why not? What are we doing? And everyone agrees that nobody wants that in their medley. Why?
If only a super smart guy would walk in the room right now and answer all of our questions.
Neil deGrasse Tyson. Neil, I was lamenting.
You invited me back.
We love having you back.
Oh, good. Thanks for having me.
I want to know what your thoughts are about big chunks of zucchini and summer squash in your vegetable medley. I say they're taking up space, brother.
I think squash, you got to take squash in doses, I think.
Yeah.
In all its varieties.
And rectally. Like, you can't eat it. It's too miserable.
I just think squash, I have to agree, I agree 80% with you. If I find squash in something, I'm thinking, all right, I got to get through this
before
I get to the tasty other parts of what's in the salad.
Okay, so why? And why included?
You have to do a lot. You have to doctor squash up quite a bit to make it palatable.
Is it the new kale? Is it the new thing we're all told we're supposed to like?
Plus, I think I'm done with kale now. I'm ready for like the next thing.
Okay, I think maybe it's squash.
I think they like it because it takes up so much room on the plate.
Yeah.
And you know what it is? It's like gypsum. In and of itself, it's nothing. But if you want to make drywall out of it, now it's got some use, you know. So squash is fine. You pumpkin pies and other things where you take butter and you take lots of molasses and nutmeg. Like it's a
I
binder.
Love that construction analogy. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Well, if I give you a handful of gypsum,
you can't do it. It's like powder.
It's just talcum powder, but in the form of drywall, insanely practical and useful.
Yeah. Fire just retardant and everything.
Fire retardant as well.
Neil deGrasse.
Aren't you proud of me for even knowing that?
But I assume you know everything, and that's got to be a problem, except for anything about women. Star Talk is the name of the show for season. I was watching an episode last night with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in there, who I just find, I call him an American treasure.
Yeah, exactly. And just someone who matters in every way, culturally, professionally. His level of dignity, and it's just you're just proud that he, you know, he's one of us, kind of thing.
And the part where everybody else, all the stuff at some point starts to come unraveled. The Bill Cosbys or the whoever's, where history is even some Kennedy stuff or Martin Luther King stuff, where like stuff starts coming out.
Yep.
I don't think anything's ever going to come out about him other than he made 38,000 points.
Although we did interview him on the morning show one time on the phone, and we could have sworn we heard a toilet flush. So I think he multitasks.
Ooh.
And that, I respect that.
So,
well, I got to say something about Jabbar. So on the show, we interview like celebrities but people you've heard of, or you know them by title, if not by name. And the goal there is to see and explore all the ways that science has touched their lives. And that's why it's a science talk show. It's not so much about the science of a scientist, it's about the science of our lives. And celebrities become excellent sort of tools to reveal that. And I also, my favorite part of this is in the conversation, I discover they have a geek underbelly, particularly a soft geek underbelly. You rub the under. So in Kareem's case, it was, we all know he had a cameo in a few movies, right? One of them,
Airplane.
The Airplane, and he was also Game of Death with Bruce Lee.
Yeah, Bruce Lee.
And so I said, okay, that's cool. It's cool. So how about after basketball? He said, after his career, he wanted to be a movie star. And I said, Kareem, come on, like you're 10 feet tall. This is not a realistic ambition here. And he said, no, I wanted to be Chewbacca. And I thought, oh my gosh, why didn't any of us think of that?
He gets it.
He so wanted to be Chewbacca. And he said it so forlongingly to me. I just said, somebody let this thing down. I mean, somebody needs to step up to the plate here.
Chewbacca's still in the new movies. This can still happen.
We can still make it happen. And he just, you know, he has long, lanky arms. I wanted to be Chewbacca. So I was charmed by this ambition that he has retained over these years.
I have a question, and I'm always perplexed why the government doesn't follow science or figure out what works or sort of tear a page. Because when you talk to people who know mechanical guys and science guys and stuff like that, they'll tell you what works and what doesn't work. And then the government's all about, here's how I feel. And it's like, I don't care how you feel. I want to know how it works. All right. Let me ask you this, Neil, and you tell me if there's some logical answer.
Mm-hmm.
If I go home, I have three bins, and the government would like me to throw the lawn clippings in the green bin, and they'd like me to throw the trash in the brown bin, and then they'd like me to throw the recycling stuff in the blue bin. And it's pretty easy to work out because we all sort of have recycling in blue kind of worked out, except for if you come 7 miles north over to here, the recycling bin is an off gray. And it doesn't say anything. It doesn't shout recycling or Earth First or anything. And my guys at the other shop frequently throw bottles and cans into the gray one, which is right next to the brown one. They're not the sharpest, you know, picks out in the tool shed, but or whatever it is. But the point is if one was blue, it'd be easier to do. Gray says nothing. Gray is neither fish nor fowl. Why aren't we a little bit smarter? And then how come when you go from municipality to municipality, they switch colors, and sometimes they're the opposite? If you go to Malibu, blue is for trash.
Oh, no.
That screws everybody up.
First, I have to say,
yes,
if that is our biggest problem in society, we're doing pretty good.
It's my biggest problem.
As a culture. But I'm impressed. Let me give the opposite revelation. I'm impressed how consistent street signs are across the country and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Stop signs have 8 sides,
right?
And so somebody's getting together and saying, let's make sure, because people drive, you know, you're allowed to drive internationally, let's make sure everybody knows how to do this.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Brightside.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that has not happened in the recycling community. That's all.
I'm just saying, I think blue's a good color for recycling. I think it's a little bit of an international sense. And if you show, Gary, if you get my phone, I'll show you. But here, it's got this weird, just flat gray, which doesn't suggest anything.
Yeah, why would you pass up blue as an option to go for gray?
I don't know, but people are very out of it, very much on autopilot, and very much need to be hit over the head with everything all the time. And if it's subtle, they go right past it.
What you're saying is, if it's something that you want to just make part of your muscle memory,
yes,
then you got to make sure there's no room for error there. Otherwise, there will be error.
If anyone has to think, we're screwed. That's what I'm saying. Yes. So the series called Star Talk Now, and it's in its 4th season, and also the book Astrophysics for People in a Hurry.
I think we chatted last time I was here. Did we chat about that book?
We did.
Yes.
Yeah. You realize it went to number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list. It was like freaking number one.
It's
and it was like, you know, we all celebrate anytime a science book gets anywhere on anybody's bestseller list at any time.
Right.
And so for this to not only land there but go there for number one for 10 weeks, it was like, oh my gosh, there's some hope that the – I would say this no matter who wrote it. I'm just saying there's some hope that people care about science.
Number one.
Number one.
That's
good.
Yeah, you call me back. Wait, we need to do a
– Yeah, do, all the voiceover.
Number two.
I was delighted, surprised, delighted, and flattered that people cared enough about science to put it on the list that high. And it's still there now. I set it a little personal record. I found it in a little sort of in an airport candy shop that was only had like 30 book titles, and it was one of those 30 in that.
Damn.
So I said, whoa.
You've arrived.
With the title Astrophysics on it. It was hidden. So I think that's a good sign, Adam. And I think just people, they're thinking about something else other than the celebrity tell-all book or the political pundit book, the ones that are usually there, bobbing up and down.
Yeah.
And so I just, and in it, you come out and you think, it give you, raise you a few notches in your science literacy scale is the goal.
Well, you know, I'm wondering if the nerds are starting to inherit the earth because, you know, it was formerly, I mean, if you take a look at the culture in the 70s and the 80s, it was jock,
yes,
macho man,
yeah.
Jock.
And the nerds got the wedgies from the jocks.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now it's a lot of Stranger Things and Sherlock Holmesies and stuff like this. Stuff my kids, they're 11 years old, the stuff they're watching is basically nerd television.
Scorpio is another show that it's got geeky people solving problems, taking names.
Yeah.
The Big Bang Theory, number one show on television. And so I have some insight to that, I think, that may be right.
Please.
So in the year 2000, I was invited back to my high school to give the commencement speech. I went to the Bronx High School of Science.
Hold on. Did you graduate?
Yeah.
Many people of color. I don't. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
continue.
I was there. Totally
okay.
There.
All right.
And so it was, so the title of my speech was Revenge of the Nerds, basically. And I just borrowed the title of the film that came out in the 80s. So in the 80s and 90s, there was a transition between nerds just getting made fun of, and once the computer started coming in and becoming a part of your life, the jock needed somebody to help him with the computer. So the stock value of nerds started to rise. And now you needed one, otherwise you could not get through the workplace or your schoolwork or anything else. Then the nerds started getting rich because we started making internet companies and software companies. So now the richest person in the world is this patron saint of geeks. It's not Bill Gates anymore. It's Amazon.
Bezos.
Jeff Bezos. So it's not only the power that we know something that you need, it's the power that comes from wielding but becoming captains of industry. And so that's it's a complete transformation of society.
And so I wonder then if kids, so first off, there's no negative connotation. My kids, they like sports and all that, but my son watches Sherlock Holmes and loves the whole sort of intellectual pursuit and profiling and how he deduces everything. It's very.
Yeah, there are no nerd bullies in this, right? Yeah, where there are bullies in the previous generation.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I maybe with stuff like the book Astrophysics for People in a Hurry and all these sort of shows, you know, I don't know what the big physical show is, or the show about the war or Friday Night Lights or whatever. And I mean, I know they're still out there, but I'm saying there's more and more and more of these sort of kids that are outsiders that are sort of not a lot of forearm, but a lot of brain.
Right.
And maybe that's the wave of the future. Maybe it's a good thing.
Well,
yes.
Like Neil was saying, like the nerd vis-a-vis the computer has invaded, for lack of a better word, all aspects
enhanced.
Well, it got into.
It was not lack of a better word. There is a better word.
All enhanced. Of life,
okay.
Including the
lack of a better word. I got words here.
Oh
ask
my
me.
God!
Okay.
It's amazing. Including sports. Like you think about Moneyball, that whole thing where started to become more about analytics,
the
and
brain
numbers.
Side of it.
Yeah,
yes.
And
yes.
It's the old school. You remember the famously in the movie, the old school scouts are like, he carried this, and his girlfriend's ugly or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And it's like, or we can look at his on base percentage and his blah blah blah.
Right.
And it's kind of transformed the game. We're still transformative.
Right. And so you said the nerds will inherit the earth. The actual mistranslated phrase from the Bible is, yeah. And the geeks shall inherit the earth.
Yes, the geek shall inherit
not the meek, the geek.
Yep.
Well, it's a good time to be in your position, right? I mean, I think you probably figured when you embarked on this journey that you'd sort of toil in obscurity in some lab somewhere and not be a rock star.
No, I imagine there'd be some interest. I knew I would write a few books, and so there'd be some following. But yeah, the world of the internet, you know, YouTube and all these platforms of exposure, they all add up. And I think this week it might have been I reached 10 million Twitter followers, which is a crazy number. Every morning I want to wake up and I say, guys, you know, you're following an astrophysicist. You can still unfollow. There's still time. But it means there's an appetite that I think was always there and was never believed. It was never – people said, no, we can't bring science. No one will like it. They hated it in school. And I think if – it is there, and people do have a hunger and an appetite, and it's being manifested not just in my following, but in all these other products that you see out there. And when Cosmos aired in 2014, it wasn't in the science ghetto channels in the upper dial. It was on Fox, and then went around the world in 181 countries on National Geographic Channel. So is science reaching a whole other a plateau of exposure and pleasure.
Well, look at, I was just talking to Seth MacFarlane about Orville and how well that show is doing, and that's just Star Trek. He just wanted to be commander of the Starship Enterprise. Like, I mean, he'll tell you that. He grew up, Seth MacFarlane is actually a pretty good geek shall inherit the earth kind of example. That was a guy probably sat around doing a lot of drawing, making weird voices and not getting laid.
And fart jokes and this
right.
sort of thing.
And now he's just out conquering the world.
Right.
Is there some connection, and I'm not saying this in a pejorative way, but as religion starts to wane a little bit, do you feel like it makes more room for these kinds of ideas in science? If you go back 100 years and people just went, look, God runs everything, he knows everything, and figure out the solar system after we die.
I don't, that's an interesting question. I'd have to like think about it longer. What I do know is that there are plenty of scientists in America who would consider themselves spiritual and even religious. That number is, depending on which science you're talking about, the physicists or the biologists or the engineers, it'll range anywhere from 60% down to 15% of that community would count themselves as religious. It doesn't go to zero just because you end up being a scientist. Empirically, it's not zero. So what? Here's where you get the issue.
I mean, for the people, because I feel like the people
Here you go. So with the people, there are people, the enlightened religious people, will say, I get my spiritual fulfillment from my religious texts. But I'm not going to go to my religious text to get science. I'm going to go to a science text for that. So they draw a line in the sand, and they're perfectly fine doing that. It's the fundamentalists who want literal interpretations of the Bible for which there is no room for modern science. And they're the minority of religious people, but they're like the loudest. So you hear about them and their views the most often.
Wait, I got a quick question, which is, I'm not obsessed with the flat earthers. I'm obsessed with Dr. Drew's obsession with the flat earthers.
Oh.
Every time I see Dr. Drew, he's like, these goddamn flat earthers. They're on Twitter. These guys are serious. They're serious. And I go, okay, so what? Move on. Yeah. No, they're serious.
You're a doctor and they're
flat earthers. Okay. Like, he's so obsessed with them. And my feeling is there's always going to be a handful of people who think Elvis is alive or what have you, and why are we obsessed with them?
Here's my analysis.
And who are these flat earthers?
Here's my analysis, a very simple analysis. The fact that we have flat earthers with such a following, for me, is evidence of two things. One, we live in a country with freedom of speech. Two, we live in a country with a failed educational system.
Ugh. Mm. Bad combo.
That combo.
That's a bad combo.
Yeah. Disaster waiting to happen.
I'm glad because I went to LA Unified. I tuned out after number one, so I don't even know.
It's not going to waste that. I don't care.
Seems cool to me. You got a question?
I have a related follow-up question, actually. And I hate to put you on the spot, but I've always wanted to ask you this question. Because okay, so there's a I'm going to butcher this quote from a movie, so I'll paraphrase it. But in Men in Black, Tommy Lee Jones says to Will Smith upon discovering there's aliens living amongst us on Earth. He says something to the effect of, you know, a thousand years ago, 2,000 years ago, we knew the Earth was flat. 1,000 years ago, we knew that the sun revolved around the Earth. Imagine what we'll know tomorrow. Meaning, like, there are things that will change your paradigm
game
completely
changers.
Every 1,000 years or whatever it is. What do you think? What is something that we know today? Everyone knows. Every child and man, adult, woman and man know that we're going to have our minds blown about 100 years from now.
It's a great question. That line works well in a movie, but not in reality. So it's okay for the movie. But in reality, the way it works is since the year 1600, when Galileo and Francis Bacon, the philosopher, laid down sort of how science works. You have an hypothesis, you test it, basically the scientific method. You test it, somebody else tests it to double check you because you might be biased. Mm-hmm. The self-awareness that you could be biased as an experimenter is a fundamental part of how science works, because I may have bias that slipped into my analysis, my data, my interpretation. You come around, you have a different set of biases, or you might have no biases, you think you have it, and then we all start getting the same answer. It's like, ooh, this is the beginnings of an emergent truth. Mm. Science finds objective truths in the world. And when it does, those truths are not later on shown to be false. Before 1600, yeah, people said, oh yeah, Earth is flat because it kind of feels that way. That must be true. Test it. I don't need to test it.
I can see.
I know we're in the center because the sun goes around us. I know. Test it. I don't need to test it. All that was pre-1600.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
So
back to the question.
Back to the question. What do we know is true now? The stuff we know is true now, if it's been experimentally verified, it later will not be shown to be false. That is what distinguishes science from every other thing we've ever invented as a species.
Wow.
Right.
Well, I have a what if.
Plenty of stuff on the frontier that we're tussling. Is there a multiverse? Is there not? I don't know. Before the Big Bang. That's the bleeding
black
edge.
Black holes, maybe.
Yeah. No, black holes, we're good.
Oh, we're good.
But
you didn't get the memo, Brent.
No one's been inside one.
Let me help.
That doesn't. You don't have to be inside something to know that it has an inside.
Four years ago, we thought Chelsea Handler was funny.
And here we are.
Okay. There's one for you, right? Mind blown? Not funny? Okay. But if you go back to 2013, you're a fan.
Yes. Well, here's an example / question. My boyfriend and I were just talking about this, and I said, oh my God, Neil deGrasse Tyson, come on, maybe he's got some insight. Simulation theory. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about that just because it's fun and interesting to talk about.
And a little scary.
And
yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Could you define it so I don't butcher it and give your take on if it's possible?
Sure. So if you play a video game, let's say Mario, all right, and there you are, Mario's jumping, collecting coins, whatever, and you can ask yourself, suppose you were a character in that game. And you were a scientist in that game. What would you do? Well, you do some tests. Well, when I jump, how long do I stay afloat? And then when I fall, if I go off the cliff and I scurry, I can come back to the cliff. Those are different laws of physics than we know. They're the laws of physics of that game. Then you create your canon of the laws of physics of Mario. Okay. Now imagine the programmer of that game could give the impression of free will to the characters in the game. So it's layers of complexity. So they have neurophysiology, and there's neurosynapse, and then they can make decisions.
And they think they're real.
And they think they're real. Okay. So now, they think they're real enough that they then invent computers, and then they want to make that same thing happen. They want to make video games in their world. And so now their computing power gets strong enough, and they make – and so this would do this all the way down. And so now, hold up all of these worlds. The original one – that wrote the first Mario game, and then all the nested Marios inside of it. And then throw a dart. Which of these universes are you most likely to hit? It's going to be a simulated universe, not the one original one that spawned them all. So, just statistically, you can ask, which of these universes are we in? And you're kind of left with the one that we're simulating.
One of the Marios.
One of the Marios universes. So I do not have a strong argument against that hypothesis.
Wow.
And it was put forth by Nick Bostrom. He's a philosopher at University of Oxford back in the 90s when computing power is getting strong enough. It allowed you to think that way. So, wow, my computer, look what my computer can do now. Maybe there's a day I can make it think autonomously and create characters in it that think that they're just independent of everything. So we could just be creations of programming of some kid in his parents' basement.
I'm glad I didn't take my normal pre-show peyote before I came out here because my head would explode.
Wait, one last thing. So then I say to myself, so is there any other evidence that this could be so? And then I said, why is it that the world, civilization has had these periods of peaceful coexistence punctuated by total mayhem? And I'm thinking, maybe the programmer thought, you know, this is boring. We got
to... Mom, call me to dinner.
I got to stir the pot here a little. Mm. So let me create a world war. Then that gets done. We finally resolve. Oh, we need another one. Listen, the game isn't interesting enough. Oh, the politics is too rational. Let's throw in some irrational politics. And so...
You're scaring the
hell out of me. So I tell you, I don't have a good argument against it. I'm sorry.
Well, let me ask, a lot of the stuff that...
Nothing's real anymore!
A lot of the stuff that was depicted in science fiction movies and things and books and stuff like that, we thought was crazy far-fetched, and now it's all kind of come around. Except for the one thing, which is we don't care to look at people when we're talking to them on the phone. Everything was like a watch. We're like, hello, and the guy's head would pop up. Yeah. Or the guy's like, Agent 17, I'm glad you're here. And the guy's head would pop up.
Video phone was never really mattered.
Skype doesn't really work. FaceTime. And it turns out we don't really want to see our moms when we're talking to them. Yeah. And we don't want them to see us.
What is it?
We don't want it. Yeah. No one wants it. We want to. We had ideas, and we want to exchange them, but we don't want to see the other person.
I'll text you.
But other than that, a lot of stuff happened. And now, a short period of time ago, back when Chelsea was funny, just a little bit of time ago, they said, they were talking about computers and then computers turning on us and then the computers taking many Bruce Willis movie had this as a theme, and everyone was sort of like, oh, get out of here. But it seems much more feasible now than it did, let's say, in 2000.
AI. You're talking about AI
Skynet.
Now.
Yeah, I'm just generally talking about us inventing something that then controls gets out us. Of control and ends up
we're
kind
not
of
necessary and
or takes hey, look, there's takes two the versions. There's two versions of it. There is the Ruskies hack into the system and launch the missiles. Mm-hmm. Or there's the one where the missiles are smart enough to launch themselves.
Right.
But it's starting to, I don't know. Do you think that's a bigger problem or just automation of everything is going to be a bigger problem?
Let me just put you at ease just briefly. So, well, sorry. There are many people who are certain that one day we will be the pets of AI.
Feel better?
Okay.
I do, because my dog's asleep right now on my sofa.
What a life.
And he's probably just humped a throw pillow and is waiting for me to give it some food.
To be someone's pet.
I would like to be my dog's pet.
You're fed. They keep you warm.
Absolutely.
They take you out to poop when you need
to. That's right. And then they pick it up.
You can sniff other people's butts and there's no law against it.
It's encouraged.
So I think I'd say bring on AI. So I'm a sort of contrarian in that world. For me, AI is something that will not manifest in that way. We will have computers will get more and more powerful, but we will use it to do specific tasks that we need it to do, just as we've always been doing it. All right. I want a computer to build the car because I want to go out to the Bahamas. So we have robots that build cars. All right. Yes, we had a robot that built, that beat us in Jeopardy. And most recently in Go, is AlphaGo from Google. Go is that territory game that you see.
But we still got him in Connect Four. There's no way that goddamn robot's going to beat me in Connect Four. Not this American.
Shut up.
That's Dave Damashek's good at Connect Four.
Reigning champion.
Yeah. So I see it as definitely entering our lives, but not as some all-knowing, all-powerful thing. It can only be that all-knowing and all-powerful if we grant it that power. And who's going to do that?
Not me.
Right.
But I want, all right, good answer. And it's going to help tonight. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to tease this next one, which is automation. I know everyone's sort of worried. Oh, people are going to lose jobs. We're going to have kiosks at Burger King, and we're not going to have people employed anymore. I'm not that worried about it, but I'm curious where Neil comes down on this. And first, I'll tell you about some technology you could use. Simply Safe, man. I understand why some people put off getting home security. Slimy sales guys, long-term lock-in contracts, expensive installations. Why bother? You should bother. You should move on over to Simply Safe and do it that way. So easy these days. All you have to do is get the Simply Safe home security system. Top-of-the-line protection. No long-term contracts. No hidden fees. You just go online. Set it up in an hour. Get your family protected. 24/7 protection. Comes in a box, you order it up, shows up on your doorstep, peel and stick with the 3M tape batteries that last up to 10 years. No drilling holes, no pulling wires, no zip ties, no guy crawling around in the underpinning. You get 10% off, and you do it right now. It's simplysafeadam.com. Simplysafe.com/Adam. Simplysafe.com/Adam. Get the 10% off. Or you can check it out at your local Best Buy. All right, so automation. A lot of people talking about that, people being put out of work. What's your take on that?
Well, sorry, I got chili in my mouth.
Sorry. Where'd you eat this time?
Just went to a corner bakery.
No, no. Mm-hmm. The second time you've come in here eating close to fast food, I'm always, I like it. To me, it's like when I walk into a bathroom and a hot chick just left and she stunk it up. I go, wow, she's real. She's a person. She's one of us.
Oh, you went into the unisex bathroom.
I go in the unisex bathroom and it just got stunk up by some hot chick or dude. We can't judge. Hey, Gary, do you have Dr. Hibbert?
We're some hot dude presenting as a hot chick.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, she's got dude
identifying.
Wiring. Yeah.
Did we ever talk about the Neil's laugh and Dr. Hibbert's laugh from The Simpsons?
It's come up before.
Yeah, oh, no.
Wait, has it?
Not when I was here, but I missed him last time because I had
I don't know. I was watching a show and I was listening to him laugh with Kareem, and I started thinking about Dr. Mm-hmm. Hibbert from
Oh, I didn't know I had
gotten that one before.
No, I had no.
I know I've never heard it back to back, but I'd like to hear it.
This is a first.
Which one you want first?
Let's hear Neil's laugh first.
Wingspan.
Well, it helps, but the ability to.
It's too much air in that laugh. That's not Hibbert's laugh. Let's hear Hibbert.
Maybe there is something there. That's pretty close.
I got to hear Hibbert talk too. We're going to work that one out. All right, fine.
You can just summon up any sound in the universe with your guys in the back room here.
I told Gary an hour ago, find some clips of Dr. Hibbert from The Simpsons. Have you ever gotten the laugh or the sound or the voice? You guys have a lot of the same tone.
No, I never thought about it.
Well, let's do it. It never come up?
No, it's never come up.
Wow. All right. I don't know. Let's hear it.
That's the morphine.
Can you give me the morphine forever?
No way. A person on morphine all the time would constantly dissolve in inappropriate laughter.
Wow!
I'm just saying, next Halloween, if you don't have an outfit.
All right, I'll work on it.
Get the stethoscope.
Totally work on it.
All right.
So you worried about automation. So
yes.
There's a...
I am. Well, look, I'm buying
God
you time.
For trying.
Hey, look, the man's got to finish his chili, and I'm just dancing over
here.
Here
we go.
Look at me.
So in math, in science, we say something is self-limiting means if it continues the way it is, the act of continuing the way it is actually prevents it from continuing the way it is. That would be a self-limiting system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? What are you talking about?
Yeah, okay. Explain that.
All right. So and let's do it in the form of automation. If everything that you have a human being doing, where they're earning money and going home and paying rent, is now replaced by a robot that then makes that same product. Well, now no one has a job with any money that can buy the product that the robot is making.
Right.
So then you don't actually win for having done so.
But does progress limit itself just to keep people employed, or do we plow forward?
No, I'm just giving an example. I'm not value judging it. I'm just describing. I'm just saying.
It can't work. It can't work completely that way.
Right, because then no one has money to buy the product that the robot is building.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
That's a self-limiting system.
Is it fair to take something like the automotive industry and you go back 100 plus years and Everything was just hand built. Yep. Just guys making wagon wheels, yep. other guys putting on tires, and the 100% car automobile mm-hmm. hand built. And then Ford came along and he got the conveyor, the production line mm-hmm. going. And then, but it still took a ton of dudes to do that. And now if you see a modern day,
there's nobody anywhere in the factory.
Yeah, there's still people there to kind of make sure everything's working right. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of robots right. doing a lot of welding, a lot of stuff. But it's still, I'm sure the Audi factory that's completely automated still has several hundred employees that have to go there
Not compared to the tens of thousands that industry used to represent. But now we have tens of thousands of people in other industries
right.
that were undreamt of at that time. And this is the hope that when we go forward, it's not just we have – remember, we're kind of the same age. Remember there was they said, oh, with automation, we no longer need a five-day work week. We'll have a two-day work
sure.
week. Well, that's only if – you did everything anyone was doing at that time.
Right.
But as time goes on, you'd think of other stuff to do. And so it's not like you're ossified in some moment and then don't take care of those tasks and then there's nothing left.
No.
Plus, yes. your field. Is it your field? Do I get to say that?
Sure.
You cannot outsource somebody putting up a building.
Other guys can do gay porn.
Yeah.
I said, oh, yeah, oh, the building.
The building, right. sorry,
yeah,
sorry.
The building
sorry,
part. Yeah,
I didn't know
too.
Your other.
No, I do. Yeah, no, I wear a lot of different hats and condoms.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One of the most in-house things is the construction industry.
Yeah, so a couple things. Yes, all those commercials for modern-day dishwashers or washing machines or whatever would show the housewife luxuriating on the sofa right. while the dishes were being washed in yeah. the other room.
Right.
And we thought that's how it was going to work,
mm-hmm.
just like we thought, you know, having a smartphone is going to free you up from having to sit behind. No, you just take your work with you right. everywhere
and not
you
only
go
that,
now.
The housewife that ran the dishwasher is now in the workplace.
Right. right.
She doesn't stay home on the couch doing nothing.
Right. So there was this notion of she's going to be freed up, but no, you're completely right. All right. we do is add more things to do because we have more free time. Now, when it comes to something like building, I'm very much into modular building and doing it in a way that doesn't involve just 50 guys showing up on a patch of dirt and, you know, stick framing 2x4s together, but actually building modular
stuff
and then bring it to the site and assemble it. But I don't know. I think we can all agree if we use sort of take Ford's factory from, you know, 1907 and you take Tesla's factory now or Audi, and we all agree, we like that.
Yeah.
It's progress.
It works.
Yes, there's less people working, but the product's better,
right.
and the people that are working are probably getting a better wage.
And you know how you know it's better? I mean, this is possibly circumstantial, but I've got to say it. If you're above a certain age, you will remember the day when there was a very real chance in the morning that your car would not start.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And now it's I'm showing my son, who's 16, we're watching a movie, and someone runs to the car. Is it a chase scene? He tries to start it, and it doesn't start. And my son is like, why won't the car start? he can't even wrap his head around this. He said, did they forget to put gas in it?
Right.
And, no, there was a day. This movie is from the 1970s. There
yeah,
was
it wouldn't
a day,
turn over.
There was a chance your car wouldn't start. And all those cars were built by people on the assembly lines. Now they're all built by robots, and every car comes out perfect. And what's interesting to me is it took a generation, but now if someone said, here, use this, it's handmade, you'll say, no, give me the one machine made because the tolerances will be much better than anything a human being could have done.
Well, we're in the same age range, and I remember also back in the day, the joke made in Japan was a joke.
Correct.
That just meant.
And they turned that around in one generation.
Boy, did they turn that
right,
around.
It right.
was.
Made Japan
it,
was a.
Cheap,
it was a,
imprecise.
It was a dig.
It just was a lemon, so to speak, if somebody
right.
said it was made in Japan. So the future is bright.
I think so. If we have enlightened leadership that understands not only how to listen to people who might know more than they do about a decision they have to make, but that we have an enlightened electorate that knows how to, or at least bases their vote on an informed decision.
Two for two.
Not on something that when they hear something they think is true, they can at least approach it with some skepticism to double check. And this is, we're not trained to do that in the school system at
well,
all.
I'm wondering, I have a lot of questions about the school system, why we spend so much time on certain subjects and zero time on many other subjects. But how to think, how to just use deductive reasoning, how to sort of get to things based on taking a couple of pieces of information and then knowing the outcome. It's very useful if you have that type of thinking. You will essentially have answers even before the question is asked.
Correct.
And so many people don't have something that they think is innate. Like, you assume it's sort of just in people, like horse sense, you know? Come on, you understand why this wouldn't work or that would work or what someone's motives were. But many people, like almost every asshole I grew up with, doesn't have an ounce of that in them. And how much of that can be taught?
I think if you get it early enough, when kids are still curious about the natural world, they're so curious that by age 3, half of what they might do to express their curiosity would actually kill them. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's the age where you're most likely to die by some accident, and it's somewhere like in sort of single digit, low single digits.
It's putting a butter knife into electrical socket.
Yeah, it's a curiosity point, and it can kill you. So most of what your house has to be, if you're raising toddlers, is so that the toddler doesn't die.
Right.
Now, if you recognize that curiosity is not something to squash, but something to nurture, because when it gets folded together with an I don't want to die sense,
right,
then you become a childhood scientist that's exploring the world around you. And we don't have enough of that, because we spend the first year of a kid's life teaching them to walk and talk, and the rest of their lives telling them to shut up and sit down.
Yeah.
And so that's not the way to raise children who then become sort of leaders in the world. So,
right.
They become followers is what happens.
The kid is picking up the butter knife and he's going for the socket, and you slap it out of their hand and yell, no, no.
So I get that, because they might die.
But we need to then substitute something else or give them another activity.
No, you don't have to substitute it. It's already there. So they reach for the egg at the top of the counter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you slap their hand saying, don't reach for the egg. I'm about to cook with that egg. Let them grab the egg. Let them do this. Mm-hmm. And then they'll play with it. And of course, it will end up breaking. And then they learn something. Something can be hard and fragile at the same time.
I have a last but very important question for you.
Yeah?
I'm going to lay out soft tacos.
Oh, no.
Okay? I need you to put them in order of a power ranking, okay? I'm not going to put fish on there because I just don't want to muddy the waters. I'm going to put out chicken soft taco, steak soft taco, and pork and or carnitas soft taco. And the ground rules are somebody's going on a taco run. We're not saying where we're going. It's not going to be Taco Bell, but it's not going to be your favorite little taco eatery. I'm just going on a taco run, Neil deGrasse Tyson. What can I put you down for?
I'm going with the carnitas. Just it's got an authenticity to it. Mm-hmm. Pork is a much bigger meat in the Hispanic communities than beef is.
Mm-hmm.
And I like authenticity of cuisine. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's where I would go. But if I had to buy for a group, I'd get like one third.
Let's go. Order. Let's go. No, I just yelled at someone for doing it. Let's go order. So we have pork number one slot.
Yeah, then beef, then chicken.
Okay, good. Yeah. You're a genius.
You can still hang.
You're a genius. Put chicken last. You're a smart man.
Wait, a quick thing. I didn't finish what I wanted to say about the egg.
Sorry.
Ooh. Okay, so the egg breaks.
I thought once the egg broke.
No.
So they can't cry over?
That's the beginning, right?
Okay.
So the egg breaks, and they learn something can be hard yet fragile, and there's a word for that. It's called brittle.
Mm-hmm,
all right? Most things are hard. They don't break. You know, this table is not going to break if you hit it. The egg will, even though it's hard. It opens up, and then there's this goo in it, like a colorless liquid and a grit. And it's just, what is that? And they'll dip their fingers in it. It was kind of gooey. And then you tell the kid, that might have been a chicken. Then the kid freaks out, okay? Mm-hmm. Then you take this goo and you say, if you heat it, it becomes solid. Most things, when you heat, they become liquid, okay? Solid to liquid.
Uh-huh.
This becomes solid. And so this is a transformation of, like, the protein molecules in the thing. I'm just saying that this life experience, what happens to a raw egg that you play with, becomes a lost teaching opportunity.
Wow. That's a great note to almost go out on, but one more follow-up food-related question.
And the president of Harvard once said, if you think the cost of education is high, try the cost of ignorance.
All right, one last power ranking.
What's that?
Scrambled, sunny side up, hard-boiled.
Ooh.
I mean, you brought up eggs.
Ooh,
now we got to finish strong.
I think Sunny Side Up is the most versatile among them because you can put it on corned beef hash. You can flip it over and get it like
dip.
Half.
Yeah.
It's got goo and salt.
Yeah, and Sunny Side Up, technically, that's what's in an Egg McMuffin is a Sunny Side Up egg. And strong. So, and in all of the breakfast, I'm going with Sunny Side Up first.
Mm-hmm.
And then, why is an omelet in that list?
I'm just going pure egg preparation.
Oh, pure egg. Then I'd have to go hard boil because you can travel with it.
Yeah,
and you
versatile.
Can eat it anywhere, and it's good, and you don't get dirty fingers or anything.
Right.
Scrambled last because you never know how they're going to make the scrambled eggs, and sometimes it's too runny.
Yeah.
Too runny or too dry.
Too dry.
You just don't know.
That's why he's a genius, everybody. Star Talk, everybody. Now it's four
seasons.
That was
a genius quiz.
You never got the Hibbert thing. You never got Dr. Hibbert.
All right.
That's Sundays. That is 11 o'clock at 10 Central on National Geographic. And, of course, Astrophysics for People in a Hurry is where you can get the book. I love the fact that it's number one. The little things like that make you feel good about the country, right?
Head in the right direction.
And the podcast, Star Talk Radio. All right. We'll take a little break and listen to a little good sports. And we'll be right back after this.
One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to this presentation of Podcast One Sports. Good Sports. Dave Damashek here. Adam Carolla there. Ace, where we left off, we were talking about what is. Let's go win, play, show on the best calendar year for movies ever. I think I've boiled it down with the assistance of the esteemed Bald Brian. He suggests it's 1998 is the best movie year ever. I say 94, but I'm flexible on it because the mid-80s had a couple of good ones. Here's 1985. The Goonies, Back to the Future, Breakfast Club, Nightmare.
Well, no, you're moving. Someone's going faster than we can read. Oh, Fright Night, Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy's Revenge, Teen Wolf
is in there. The weirdest Tom Cruise movie ever, Legend, Weird Science.
Oh, I love Weird Science.
Do you?
And St. Elmo's Fire. I love both those movies. St. Elmo's Fire is a very guilty pleasure, but I will rarely turn it off.
Burning in me.
Yeah, I won't because it is. You have to understand, what year is this, 85?
Yes.
So I'm just out of high school. I'm...
You and Ray and Bohm fancied yourselves to be very much like the cast of St. Elmo's Fire.
No, but you have to understand my perspective. I'm out of high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm living in a one-bedroom apartment with three dudes with no air conditioning in North Hollywood. It's just like an easy bake oven. It's just sweltering. People flopped out all over the place. I'm driving this pickup truck. I have no money, no pussy, no aspirations. No, I had nothing. It's just literally, I'm making $8 an hour. I'm driving a pickup truck and it's the Hunger Games. Like everyone's just trying to survive. And I'm watching St. Elmo's Fire. And first off, I'm seeing like leaves changing colors, brick buildings with ivy growing down the side of them, these cool bars that were established in 1741 where everyone goes to have a cold one on happy hour. Everyone going to school, getting their life going, you know, but getting their own place, establishing themselves, driving around Jeeps. Again, through... I don't know, they're Cambridge or Boston or where, I'm not
Georgetown.
Cambridge, but Georgetown. We're looking at, I've never seen a tree. I've seen trees die and change color, but I've never seen them change color and then change back.
This is the same country at the exact same time that you're living in.
But everything I see is stucco and mini malls and 7-Elevens and just aluminum sliding windows and then nothing that even comes close. No one I know is going to college. No one has a Jeep.
All
no one
I need is a set of wheels.
Just the idea, like, of just seeing Judd Nelson just wearing that big overcoat of his, like, I would just go, where do you get one of those? Who could afford that? Like, who? Where'd you get that coat? Who has a coat like that? That's a super expensive coat.
Isn't that funny? Because at the same time, probably the same time, I'm watching in Pittsburgh, PA, in late November, early December. I'm watching amidst the steel gray sky games played between Ohio State and Michigan and Pitt, Penn State. And then the next rivalry game would come on, and suddenly it was sunbaked, and it was Technicolor, and both teams were wearing their home jerseys, one in maroon, the other in powder blue. UCLA. What is this exotic land? What is a victory bell game? What is this? How is that in what planet is this being? No, this is the U.S. of A. It's right just at the other end of the continental U.S. of A.
Yeah, so watching St. Elmo's Fire, just like the part where, like, Rob Lowe went back to school and was playing catch and walking through the campus, and they're, like, burning leaves and stuff like that. It was insane. That's, again, sitting in a stucco box in North Hollywood, just staring at this stuff.
So that's
going,
why you fancy saying Elmo's Fire. So, okay, so mask, not the mask, but mask with the star-crossed
real genius, which I never saw. Hey, hypothetical.
Go ahead.
Would you rather, think about your kids,
okay,
floating around the internet, tape of you in an 80s movie playing the fake saxophone, like Rob Lowe, with your tie up around using as a bandana.
Yeah.
Playing fake sax, like Rob Lowe in that movie, or a one-time gay porn movie where you got to be the top.
Wow.
In terms of your kids, in terms of their humiliation level, you know, like in life, if they stumble across this and the look of horror. What would it be?
Well, in the progressive 21st century, I got to go with the latter.
Yeah,
there, you know, I mean, the saxophone is that's an embarrassment that I'm not going to be able to wash
this is
off.
You'll be seen as progressive.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, hey, Dad's he's
open
minded.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Like the saxophone, Dad. Oh, please. That was an easy one.
All right. What's the next year?
So that's 85. You heard some of the movies there. Real Genius is a pretty good Val Kilmer picture. Now to 94. This is the one that I initially asserted is the best.
It starts with Shawshank and Pulp Fiction.
Do
and
you
Forrest
like
Gump.
Shawshank?
Yes.
Kimmel hates it. Kimmel never saw it. And then we remember that when
he may have heard you say you liked it.
No. Remember,
To be fair.
It was in the Kimmel writer room that he announced, I'd never seen this movie, and everybody was aghast about that. Sporty Simmons, chief among them, like, well, you never saw it now? That way I can't believe it. I can't believe it, Jimmy. You never saw that movie, The Ace Man. Tell him. So anyway, he ended up seeing it, and then he rendered the verdict, overrated.
Well, I think Jimmy is wired that way, and most people are wired that way. That if they didn't see a movie, it's because they decided it wasn't very good.
That's true.
Then a whole chorus of people yell at them, it is very good, which is essentially saying you're wrong. Your feelings are wrong. Like your inner compass or your little divining rod or whatever you use to gauge life, not calibrated. It's not calibrated correctly. So then if you come back and go, it was even better than you described, now you have to live with an uncalibrated divining rod. But if you go, I knew it, then you're recalibrated.
All's right in your world. Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
I think most people have that predilection.
Yeah, I hear you on that.
But
okay,
Shawshank,
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction was the two movies, Pulp Fiction and Forrest Gump, were sort of breakthroughs. Like they were, I don't know, Forrest gets a little unnecessary hate. I feel like Forrest Gump was marvelously entertaining to me, and Pulp Fiction was as well. And they're both sort of breakthrough films. Like they changed, they changed genres a little
bit. I'm not crazy about the message of Gump. I hate to read into it too much. But, well, first of all, I didn't love the running across the country thing back and forth. That was a bit silly. But then also, the message is, hey, better to go through life a little dim. You know, mm-hmm. just be a passenger on life and everything will work out for you. I think that's a weird message. But all right. Pulp Fiction, Dandy, Lion King, a lot of people.
What about this message? for the ladies. Don't worry if you're ritualistically sexually abused by your dad. One day, you'll get AIDS. You know what I mean? Like, what kind of message is that to my daughter? Like, you know what I mean?
One.
It's a weird one. Don't worry. You'll be physically and sexually abused by your alcoholic dad all throughout your childhood, but you won't see her 33rd birthday.
Chin up.
Chin up. You're going to get AIDS. So it's a weird message.
I was talking the other day about Greece and the message that sends, the weird message that sends to young ladies out there. Well, you have a so she's a goody-goody girl who the bad boy biker dude is after, but to win him in the end, she turns into basically a trampy kind of girl in the satin pants and the 70s style. Did we talk about this already?
No.
I think that's a way. And then also for his part, Travolta goes from bad boy into clean cut guy. Hey, everybody, you know, if you really want somebody to like you, change. Yeah. That's the message.
Worst message to a little girl, Little Miss Sunshine. You can eat breakfast. You can eat ice cream for breakfast with your junky grandfather, but don't worry. All you have to, you don't need any talent. You can be fat. Just get in that onesie and shake your ass up on stage like a little whore, and you'll come out on top.
That was the message.
That's what I walked away from. Have ice cream every day for breakfast. Don't worry about learning to play the piano or spin a baton. Just get up there and dance like a whore, and you'll delight your junky grandfather. Oh, no, wait. He'll be dead. He'll have OD'd before that. But anyway, he's a hero because he's a junkie and cusses. It's a great message. It's a great message.
94, you also have Hoop Dreams, in my opinion, the greatest documentary, certainly, that I've ever seen.
Legends
and one
of the Fall,
top
Ace
five
Ventura
movies.
I got to go 1994 here.
All right, one more to service Bald Bride. Dumb and Dumber, a comedy
Natural
that holds
born
up.
Killer. All right.
A lot of gems. Real quick, show us 98, if you don't mind, because Bald, this is his offering. Lebowski, okay, good. American History X.
Wait, what's the number one star? You're moving too fast. Halloween, oh, sorry. Yeah, Big Lebowski, American History X, Saving Private Ryan. I do love that movie. Practical Magic.
Truman Show is great.
Interesting. All right, Mulan, Bridge, Bride of Chucky, Something About Mary, good. Armageddon, love it. Can't Hardly Wait. The Parent Trap.
I don't think this beats 94.
Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels. It's close. Fear and Loathing, not good. The Wedding Singer, overrated, not good. Shakespeare in Love is good. Blade,
Blade 2 is good.
Meet Joe Black, Wild Things, over Urban Legend. All right, I'm going to go with you on 94, but this is close.
Yeah.
This is close.
Yeah, I like those mid-80s ones, too. I'm going to stand by my opinion. Apologies to Bald Brian and anyone else. Thanks for playing. But, so I'll go 94. Then I'm going to go 85, and I'm going to go 75. I think actually 74, because that has Godfather 2 there. That's my win play show on that. So we park our cars in the same garage. We figured it all out. One more good sports to go this week. Check it out every Friday, Monday through Friday, as a matter of fact, on the Adam Carolla Show. For now, Podcast One Sports presentation of Good Sports out. Good Sports.
Hey, it's Jay Moore, and it is time, finally, for America's Lakers Podcast. That's right, I'm going to be hosting America's Lakers Podcast. My man Aaron Larsoul, an analytical genius, he's going to bring to the table what I can't every Wednesday. America's Lakers Podcast exclusively at podcastone.com, the podcastone.com app, which I highly recommend. You can rate and review this podcast on all Apple products. And guess what we're not going to do? We're not going to bathe in the gossip and the gratuitous negativity that's been swallowing Los Angeles whole lately. Who did what? Who snitched? Who said what? How about truth? How about facts? How about statistics? How about rotations? What's Luke Walton thinking? Who's underperforming? Who's overachieving? Who's rewarded? Who's coming? Who's going? And what are we going to do with all that delightful, delicious cap space? America's Lakers Podcast with me, Jay Moore, and my man, my brother, Aaron Larsoul, every Wednesday, podcastone.com.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace, now you got the ticket to comedians in cars getting coffee. You have the most coveted Porsche ever. And if Jerry Seinfeld doesn't want you on his show, then something's wrong. He already told you. Remember he said about you your bit. That's a good bit. What can't Adam complain about? You're in. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
His thing to me was rich man, poor man. He was like, that's your bit. That's your bit. That's how
franchise bit is.
That's how stand-up comedians think. Like, have your bit.
There's your sign.
That's right. I said, I don't do that. And then I said, geared up. And I started walking away laughing. Let me tell you about what your bit should be. LifeLock, man. Equifax. I got a breach. You know about that. You want to know, should you freeze your credit? Unfortunately, this step will not protect you against every identity fraud threat out there. Hackers, they get hold of social security numbers, birth dates, driver's licenses, and they commit crimes in your name, even steal from your 401k. This is the future. This is the sad, sad future. They're going to get hold, and they're going to ruin your credit, and they're going to ruin your good name, and you'll never get to undo that. It's such a... It's like your credit can be ruined in a heartbeat, and it takes so long to fix it. Let's not let that happen. Let's get LifeLock. I have it. The kids have it. The wife has it. They got the proprietary technology. Detects a wide range of identity threats. They'll alert you if your info is being used, and you get the protection that you need in 2017. You get it with LifeLock, Dawson.
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you see more than if you're just monitoring your credit. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use promo code Adam. That's Adam for 10% off your LifeLock membership. Visit LifeLock.com and save 10% now.
It might be an apropos time, and I think it works pretty well from an audio standpoint. We were talking few weeks ago about this crazy Neumann watch and how it worked and the auction and all that kind of
17
stuff.
17 million or something?
Yeah, over, yeah. 17.8.
They did a story on CBS Good Morning Sunday. By the way, don't ever send me a tweet. Go, hey, Ace Man, you catch Good Morning Sunday on CBS? Not unless I've been up all night, in which case I still didn't catch it. I'm deep into you porn at that point. But no, I've never gotten up Sunday morning and said, let's go. What's going on?
You watch the Sun interview shows?
Out there in the world. It is crazy, the people that watch those shows, especially Sunday morning. But they ran a story on this Neumann watch and the backstory of it, which is very interesting, and how it worked. And then even something I discovered, you know, there's an interesting thing. Oh, well, I'll show you the thing. You guys, Gary whacked it down about 3 minutes, but I'll let you guys hear it. But it's sort of the story of that almost $18 million watch. And I thought you guys, it works for audio. You don't really need the visual. Go ahead and play that, Gary.
Over a week ago, at the Phillips Auction House in New York City, a trove of 50 wristwatches was up for sale. But the star of the show, with its own special room and a high-tech security system, was a certain Rolex. For decades, actor Paul Newman wore this Rolex Cosmograph Daytona. He took up auto racing while filming the 1969 film Winning, in which he starred alongside his wife, Joanne Woodward. She gave her husband a watch to celebrate his new hobby, inscribed with a hidden message.
Here, beautifully engraved on the back, it reads, "Drive carefully, me."
So sweet.
Me being Joanne.
Joanne.
The Rolex Cosmograph Daytona wasn't a bestseller when it debuted in 1963, but worn on the wrist of Paul Newman, it became the epitome of cool. In fact, it became known as the Paul Newman watch. But after the star's death in 2008, the watch that started it all seemed to have vanished.
I was about 15 years old, and I was at a racetrack.
There's my Porsche car.
James Cox, who met Newman in the late 70s.
I loved cars and racing, and Paul was racing. I spotted Paul sitting after he had just gotten off the track with his car, and he just gestures for me to come under this barrier to get a better photo of the car.
The story takes another turn a few years later, when at college, Cox met a girl named Nell Potts.
Same guy.
But what he didn't know was that Nell Potts was a stage name. And only later, when they were dating, did he learn her real name, Nell Newman. He also got to know her father.
One summer, I offered to rebuild this treehouse that was kind of a classic feature on the family property. It ended up being just Paul and I. And I would work on the treehouse during the day, and he would often come over at the end of the night and just check on my progress. He comes over one day, and he says, James, you know what time it is? And I'm like, no, I'm not wearing a watch. And he says, well, and he takes his Rolex off. He says, if you remember to wind this, it tells great time. And hands it to me. And then he proceeds to show me how to wind it and took a little time with me.
For years, Cox wore the watch, even after he and Nell Newman broke up, until he discovered the Rolex had taken on a legendary life of its own, which is why he decided to sell the watch, in part to benefit the charitable foundation of his lifelong friend, Nell Newman.
And I have a commission bid at $1 million. That someone
10 days ago, buyers from around the world got their chance to bid on the Paul Newman watch.
13 million. 14 million 600,000. 15 million.
Final price, $17.8 million.
It is history now.
The highest price ever paid for a watch at auction.
That's
a hell of a story.
Cool.
The story of the watch. Now, Gary, there was a part you edited out, but it was the part where she was reaching for the watch. They had the watch on display. It's out and open, not in a glass case, just open.
No, that was in there.
Oh, did I not see it?
I can play it for you.
Oh, I looked down. It doesn't matter. And when you reach for it, it goes back into its little cubby hole and hides away. Did we miss that?
I didn't see that.
Oh, you didn't see it either.
That definitely did not air.
Oh.
Just now.
Gary, what about the part where you... Oh, it aired when it was miniature or something. We didn't see it at the beginning. Okay.
We didn't see it.
Okay, there it goes. So don't do the... All right.
Anyway. I love all the proxies there on the phone trying to see if the bidder's going through.
That thing...
There's a cut to 8, 10 people on the phone.
That thing where it sits open. It's like a black box.
It's a groundhog.
And it's another little box on top of it. And as you reach for it, it'll go back down.
Whack-a-mole.
Right. Whack-a-mole is what it'll do.
Wow.
Now, somebody told me that thing's called the Raptor. And I realized that's our word. See, in the 50s, it was supersonic. Mm-hmm. Then we got into jet. Then we got into turbo. And there's a couple like satellites in there. And then we got into stealth like in the 80s. Mm-hmm. The one for this era, Raptor. Everything's Raptor. Right. That'll be the name that defines this little, it's like a 15-year period. This just like stealth and turbo, like all the 80s was like stealth and stealth.
It's Raptor time.
That went from like 85 to like 95 or 97. Stealth. We learn a new word. We go to
people at Gillette are writing this down furiously. It's our next razor.
No one heard of a Raptor, and then the movie came out. Mm-hmm. And then we started naming basketball teams and trucks. Mm-hmm. And there's a Ford Raptor pickup truck.
It's a Raptor.
It's a Raptor, and I don't know why the basketball team, the pickup truck, and the thing that hides the expensive watch all need to be called a Raptor. Yeah. It's the same reason everything was turbo this or mock
Sonic.
That, you know.
Cool.
Yes. Think of all the mock things. When we broke the sound barrier, Mach 1. Yes. Everybody had the Mach 1 razor, the Mach 1 car. There's a Mustang Mach 1. You know, it's like, no one says mock anymore.
Yeah,
we're done.
Yeah, we're
done. We learn a word. We go nuts with it. And then we get bored with it. And we move on.
It's no Raptor.
Yeah. I wonder what the next... I hope we move on to the Merkin period. Merkin 1. 0 to 60, 2.9. Yeah. Just
introducing the Mitsubishi Merkin.
The American Merkin.
This Merkin has 6 blades.
I'm proud to be a Merkin.
Yes. Something is going to take the place of Raptor soon. It's time for a new one. And I just like to humbly suggest Merkin. That's just me. All right. We got some calls up there. We got some news to do. I'll tell you about Stamps.com. Oh, man. We use it here all the time. All our shipping is done with Stamps.com. Print official U.S. postage, any letter, any package, any class of mail. Do it right from your own computer. Use your printer, man. They give you a digital scale. It goes up to 80 pounds. And you put whatever you want on there. It's the holidays. You're sending things abroad and around. And You don't want to go down to the post office and wait in line. So you go with Stamps.com. Enjoy Stamps.com. They got a special four-week trial. Plus postage, digital scale, no long-term commitments. How about that? Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Adam. That is Stamps.com. Type in Adam. Get the scale. No long-term lock-in contracts. Get the postage. Do the whole thing from your house. Again, just forget about the holidays. No reason to ever go back. It'd be like going to a library and borrowing the computer. Mm-mm. Do it at home. Yeah. Do it at home. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. All right, let me blow through these calls, and then we'll do some news, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Vet calling to check up on Phil. All right, let's do this. Hey, Will, 34, D.C.
Hey, Gina, Bald, what's up?
Hey, man. Thank you for asking about Phil. Phil started
some syrup, you said?
Started taking some oil. Started taking some oil. And started taking oil on a nightly basis, and then had another seizure a couple of nights ago. So, whatever the oil.
What's in the oil? What's in it?
All I know is it's got butterscotch flavoring in it. I don't know if that's the effective part or not. I don't know what.
Did you get it from the vet?
It was a Guatemalan chick out back.
Is that weird?
She just came around. She's pushing a cart. Mm. She had the dog. She had the fruit cups. And then she had some stuff for dogs. Yeah, I guess Lynette went and got it from the vet. And I don't know what it is. And maybe Gary, I don't know. Do you know what that oil was? We could take a picture of the container or something.
Hold on one second. I have a picture.
You do have a picture of it.
Yes, I do.
That's butterscotch and something flavor.
Yeah, there's another flavor like that.
Yeah. As far as I can tell, it doesn't really prevent the seizures because Phil had a seizure and then he had his next one about 3 months later, 2 months later. And then he started taking the oil and had one in about 12 days. So,
okay, bro.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust that.
Your testosterone.
Butterscotch vanilla.
K-Bro Vet Oral Solution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. Oh, Gary, find my phone because I got some great pictures of Phil on there.
It contains potassium bromide, if that does anything for you.
Potassium bromide. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. So that's kind of the first line treatment that we don't use as much kind of in the I'll still see old timers using that as a first step. Again, I'm saying all this is general information, not telling you to do anything different because I don't have a California license, but like I said, there's newer medications out there that I think get better control of signs with dogs with seizures. The one I mentioned, zonisamide, that's a great one, and then there's one also called levetiracetam, goes by Keppra. That one's a little more expensive. It's about three times a day.
Are they butterscotch, vanilla flavored, or
resveratrol?
Yeah.
No, they'll flavor it with they'll kind of compound it to make it more appetizing because the stuff can taste kind of bitter. And
yeah, I get it. But do dogs eat a lot of butterscotch or just a medium amount of butterscotch? Or is it all pretty much just giblets? And so if a dog eats giblets,
imagine what a treat it's going to be when he gets his first taste of butterscotch.
We give our dog a beef-flavored pill every day. It has no problem with it.
I would argue that the butterscotch and vanilla is confusing to the creature that's never experienced butterscotch and never craved butterscotch.
That's the first time I've heard it. I've heard of one flavored as butterscotch. I've always thought cat shit would be the best flavor to do it, but the dogs love that. So
old shoe flavor. Cat turd.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, thanks. Well, do me a favor. Send me a tweet. I'll give it to Lynette. We'll figure this thing out because the butterscotch bromide has not been effective. Although I've said a million times, I was a basketball hoop and a big dog away from having a five as a childhood. Right, yes. Everyone is just a childhood. Big dog and a basketball hoop, at least the male version is, between having a horrible childhood and just fair to middling. Just a big dog and a basketball hoop. My piece of crap parents never indulged in either one, but I wanted a big dog. I always wanted a big dog. And yesterday I walked into the bedroom and Natalia was in her Winnie the Pooh kind of onesie. And Phil was like flopped on her, just sort of completely engulfing her on this thing. Just laying, we're looking at pictures.
It's like they're grappling but not moving.
There's a few other scary that you
the loading's still going.
Scroll
we'll
through. But there were it was just so great to see this big, fat, 110-pound beast just trying to crush my daughter. And I just thought, I love it. I love that. I love that they are literally, we're literally the same size. We're just looking at this dog that weighs exactly the same amount as my daughter, just trying to crush her.
Your dog is using your full-size human child as a body pillow.
Yeah, as a snoogie.
Yeah.
Yes.
A snoogle.
Yeah. I had a nice, good times. So I'll show you one more picture on her.
God.
By the way, this was noon on a Wednesday. This is what people do at my house. Everyone's just sprawled out, splayed out all over the bed.
Shouldn't you be at school?
I was working. Yeah. I took this off the nanny cam. All right. So we'll show you the picture at amcrawl.com. Let me take one more and then we'll jump to the news. Joe, 38 Florida. Joe.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's an honor to talk to you guys. You guys entertain me every day.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. Yeah.
No, but I've made this assumption, especially today. I just had enough, and I had to just call in and check in with you guys. But I've noticed that all, like, chicks that have the cut marks, you know, ex-cutters, I've noticed they're always hot. And I just find it odd because, like, you would think, like, most of them are insecure, but they're always insanely hot. So I've noticed it. I see it when I'm at coffee shops or whatever.
Where do you see the cutting? On the thigh?
No. Well, one chick, I did see it on the thigh, and it was pretty gnarly. And but then I've seen it, like, on the arm, the forearm. See a lot there. And, so I didn't know if you guys ever noticed stuff like that. But, I mean, and the other thing, too, it's like you would think that chick would have it tattooed or covered up, but it's always just right there. And then I can't help but just like look at the two, go, wow, she's hot. Wow, that's a lot of cut marks. And then she notices that I'm looking at it like, hey, asshole.
We haven't noticed, Joe, but Neil deGrasse Tyson was saying the exact same thing during the break.
Scientific. So,
Yeah, he always pounces. Right. Yeah.
Easy praise, what he calls it. Which is weird.
Yeah. Hey, Joe. Do you think that those chicks are always abnormally skinny because there's an eating disorder, workout, body dysmorphic, a component of this? And there are plenty of chicks out there. Here's the thing. Like, there is a kind of a de facto thing that if you're under 30 and under 135 pounds, you're at least a 6. Like, there's just, and if your hair isn't too short, like if there's a hair length, weight, age thing where you're just this to start off at. And maybe he's experienced a lot of like young chicks with eating issues. So they're like skinny and they're young. There's not that many chicks that are like 26, skinny and have long hair where you go, yeah. No, thank you. Like, it's your own. Now, it doesn't mean you're beautiful. It doesn't mean you're curvaceous. It doesn't mean you're desirable. It just means you're at least a 6.2, right?
That's what I used to refer to it, or still refer to it as checklist hot. Like, if you got the blonde hair, you're skinny, you got the you at least pass. Check off a certain number of boxes to qualify.
Yeah, so I think there's an eating disorder component here.
Did somebody just eat Joe?
You all right?
Yeah.
Fire that waiter.
No.
So,
are you still there?
Yeah. So these chicks are always a little too skinny and a little on the younger side, and it works, right?
I think what it is that they look like, a year ago, they were like, yes, they are always like maybe 8 or 10 pounds underweight, but you could see them working it back on, but they've always turned out to be like they got the good bones, the good structure, and it just, you know. And I've just always seen it so consistent. I've just never seen.
But also, maybe the heavy ladies are wearing sweatpants and a hoodie and not showing off so much skin. You know,
hey, if Drew has to miss a week of the Adam and Drew show, you can always get Joe to come on.
That's true.
Talk to people with real problems.
All right. There's a rich man, poor man, which is gated driveway. Had that one before. There's
gated
something to that. Mm-hmm. Something to it. But Brian, I don't think Brian's in love with it.
No, one of my neighbors has a gated driveway. There's an older house with one of those,
There's enough of that. Yeah. All right. Should we do a little news, Gina Grad?
Let's do it.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
All right. So start with a little jail news. The Manhattan DA will seek an indictment against Harvey Weinstein next week. That's what the New York Post reports anyway. The NYPD has been gathering evidence against the disgraced producer for allegedly raping actress Paz de la Huerta. If that sounds familiar, she was on Boardwalk Empire. That's what I know her from. Twice in 2010. Now Manhattan DA Cy Vance plans to present a criminal case next week. The next step, according to the Post, would be to obtain an arrest warrant to pick up Weinstein in Arizona, where he is currently in rehab.
So oh, is he still in?
Yeah, apparently snoozing in those group therapy sessions. So out of all of these women who've come forward, whatever happened with Paz de la Huerta, the details are, they have a case.
Well, I heard there are two separate occasions.
Yeah.
And it must be great to be a producer because you never really have to be at work or do anything or something. I can tell you, like, when you're making a movie, there are like 11 people that are busting their ass, and then there's another 150 are doing nothing. Like all those non-writing producers and stuff like that. Like, you know, it's like I was going out on a modeling shoot. He'd parked his car out in front. He wouldn't leave until, and then when I came out, he offered to drive me home. And then later on that night, he was probably like, the guys who are directing films and making the films and James Gunn and all this stuff, they're just swamped.
Yeah. Right.
They're
just
buried.
Time.
They're buried. They're buried. They're working 75-hour weeks and completely buried for months at a time. And these guys just put their names and introduce a few people. And they got all the time in the world. Oh, and if they show up on set, whoever's making the movie actually kind of hopes they leave. Mm-hmm. So it's a weird thing where the set is kind of their workplace, but no one working there wants them there. So you got plenty of time for rape. Plenty of time for backup and rape.
Oh, that's good to know.
So he evidently on two occasions was like waiting, kind of stalking her and getting her to come back and, you know, sort of come up to the apartment. And also, I'm always curious two things. What these guys do all day and then what their wives think they do all day. Because it seems like it's a pretty involved.
Going out for work again. What happened on occasion number two? Hey, Paz, I know things didn't go so well last time, and they're going to go just as bad this time. Like, fool me once.
Yeah,
no, that's on her. But I'm saying, like, how does he do it twice?
Maybe he was coming to apologize.
I have no.
It's plausible, actually.
Yeah, we had half that right. I don't know how it works, but listen, when we were sitting here with Garrigus, sort of trying to unpack this about 3 weeks ago, I'm saying, get out. Like, he should be going to see if he can bribe the heirs of Marlon Brando and move on to that island or someplace without extradition. Like, this is going to... So what's going to happen, and I sort of naively was saying to Garrigus, he's got to go get out of the country, like, now and bunk up with Roman Polanski.
That was exactly what I was thinking.
Because... it's all going to go down, and when it starts going down, he may never go anywhere ever again.
Right.
And I think that's what's going to happen. Now, what Mark Garrigus was saying is he can't just go. First off, he can't go to Europe. He can't go to Europe because there's charges waiting for him
Scotland
in Europe.
Harder, yeah.
And I said, there's charges waiting for him in England. And I said, aha, but what about Brexit? And he went,
Look at you.
It's kind of interesting because maybe they are kind of autonomous. You want to be autonomous? Fine. But I said, then what about going to France? He said, no, they're not going to have
He's got a large world map on the wall with red pens.
And he kept
what about
saying,
Madagascar?
He kept saying Armenia. And I keep thinking he's kidding, but I'm not sure he is. There are a handful of places you don't want to go, but you could go, but they don't have extradition stuff. And
Uzbekistan.
Now he's not going anywhere, and it looks like this is just going to keep going, and I think he's going to end up in the joint.
Wow. What?
How insane if you would have tapped everyone on the shoulder 4.5 months ago, or whenever the Cosby trial was going on, and you went, hey, Bill Cosby, hey, Weinstein, yeah, one of them's going to end up in jail for rape. Which one's going to be? How much would you bet?
Sure, at that time, but everything on Cosby.
Yeah. And I don't know that this would be, you know, Jordan Belfort, white collar jail. I don't think people are going to look very kindly on this. You know what I mean? This is not a Ponzi scheme or something. This is rape multiple times. So, okay, in other jail news, but more worldwide, Yahoo News reports that if the standard practices apply, the three UCLA basketball players, one of them being LiAngelo Ball, who was arrested Tuesday in mainland China under suspicion of shoplifting, face between 3 and 10 years in prison if convicted. That's according to Chinese lawyers who briefed Yahoo Sports. The sentencing guidelines could shift depending on the amount that the Chinese could approve was allegedly stolen. So here's what happened. Authorities believe the players, three players, one of them LiAngelo Ball, shoplifted from a Louis Vuitton store near the UCLA team's hotel outside of Shanghai. The Bruins are in China to play Georgia Tech on Saturday in the season opener. The players were arrested Tuesday after local law enforcement came to the team's hotel and questioned both UCLA and Georgia Tech players before taking the three away. LeVar Ball, who loves to be in front of the camera, has been asked to pipe down and not give any speeches or make any statements. And the kids, if convicted, could spend 3 to 10 years in prison. I don't see that happening. But
well,
you don't know.
Isn't everything in China knockoff anyway? Like, is it real Louis Vuitton stuff? Or is it just cheap Chinese knockoff stuff?
I thought they were going straight to the source to get the stuff where it's actually made.
I think, I mean, they were at the Canal Street. They were at the Louis Vuitton store.
I don't know. This notion of taking a bunch of folks and bringing them to China to play a basketball game, it seems like things could go wrong.
Things did go wrong. Now, let me ask you this protocol question. I'm a USC fan. I hate everything UCLA, mostly because they suck. But is this too sensitive of a thing to make fun of them about, or should I wait till it all shakes out? Or
are UCLA?
Yeah.
Are you worried that they're going to go do hard time?
I think it's that's a good question for Garagos, and this is a good question for Damashek, too, on Good Sports. Is this a rivalry thing, or do we need to be sensitive here?
I would argue...
There's kids that are going to face jail time in China.
Well, here's what I... Here's
your sunglasses.
Here's what I think. You remember Stein Biergarten or whatever the guy's name was that was put in a coma?
Yes,
and then
Warburton.
You know, that's our memory starters. We have too many people to remember. But this guy goes to North Korea. Gets caught, I don't know, stealing a poster above his bed or something. Otto Warmbier. Then gets put in a coma, gets shipped back here. Now, Otto Warmbier, he's just an anonymous college student. Nobody heard of him, and he was... We didn't hear about him until he got put into a coma and shipped back here. I mean, there was a couple little drips and drabs of stories.
I never heard the name until the big story.
These things don't work when they have a good publicist. You know, when this is on the front page and in the hearts and minds of Americans. Because all of this is it's all political campaign and movement, you know. China probably won't be able to take the heat of taking notable athletes, especially with one of them being a Ball,
and
saying, sorry, you have 18 years of hard labor. There's nothing you can do about that. That'll in the zeitgeist, because CNN will lead every day with that story. People will be outraged. There'll be pressure put upon, you know, the powers that be. It can't happen. It has to be a nameless, faceless. It's sad, but if it's a nameless person, yes, it could happen. Okay. Probably big, too much profile. Therefore, go ahead and make fun of them. And it's got to be on them, because there had to be there has to be some briefing that suggests, I know here you like to walk with your dick hanging out of your pants and you spit your gum out when you're done with it on the sidewalk and whatever it is you do. Do not do that there. Take that gum, wrap it up in its wrapper, walk it back to the hotel. Like, do not.
Dispose of it.
Whatever we do here, don't do it there.
Sorry, Coach. I couldn't hear you. I was taking my dick out of my pants.
Yeah.
No, wasn't it because of gum? Remember the kid?
The
kid in Singapore. Yeah, got caned in the square. He wasn't following the Singapore rules.
Yeah, I think that kid may have graffitied something for some reason.
Yeah, something like that.
But either way, everyone had to have a serious briefing, which is no dicking around in China.
No.
You don't do whatever you do here.
Yeah.
Don't do it there. And I'm sure everyone got coached up to that, right?
They probably actively ignored it. Another point I just thought of was there are, just based on my experience, I worked in the one of my work study jobs working in the international student department at USC. I did attendance for them. I can only imagine there's just as many, if not more, Chinese national students at UCLA. So I imagine there's going to be a bit of a political, like,
round them up.
You got 250 Chinese, you know, nationals studying it right now. So
I think it'll work out.
It'll be okay. Well, Danica Rome, I don't know if that name sounds familiar in the last day or two. She's the 33-year-old journalist turned public works advocate who just won Virginia's 13th District House of Delegate seat, becoming the first openly...
Is the dude?
Used to be.
The first openly transgender person elected and seated to a state legislature in the United States. Rome beat out the district's 26-year incumbent conservative values and government transparency champion, Bob Marshall. The race attracted national attention as Marshall, who's 73, a conservative who proposed a bill restricting which bathrooms transgender people could use, faced off against the transgender stepmother who plays in a metal band. The district, the district also found itself in the spotlight as one of a few Republican-governed areas that voted for Hillary Clinton in the 2016 presidential race.
I like this person, I think, because I think their rap is like jobs, infrastructure, and gender junk. I know it comes in third or fourth or something. I'm all about wherever you come from or whatever you were or whatever you're transitioning to. If everything's just about jobs, schools, infrastructure, and we leave all this other diversity and all the other sort buzzwords we're getting into, all the other stuff where when you go, my platform is transgender rights, I don't need your ass in there because you don't represent, that doesn't represent enough of the people.
Well, and also conversely, she beat out the guy who made it his life's work to make these bathrooms a big deal.
Yeah, to be fair to him, he was 72. It's probably not his life's work. I'm sure when he was 19, he wasn't fighting this battle. It's probably a slightly newer thing on his platform.
Touché. 71, it's like, my time has come.
but I'm just saying, like, talk about, you know, small to big. This was his thing.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know enough about it. I'm assuming people made it his thing. I don't.
He proposed the bill. It says
no. He proposed 1,000 bills, though. I don't. It's probably suicide as a politician to go, this is my thing. I'm all about bathroom doors and the labeling of it. I'm sure somebody decided it was going to be his thing. He didn't object, or he did the bill.
Okay, here.
And then someone made it his thing too. I'm sure if you talk to him, he wouldn't say it's my thing. But either way, whether it's your thing or not. All I want is whoever's in there, let's go jobs, let's go schools, let's go infrastructure, and then all the equality stuff that'll, if we have time, when we're done with the jobs, and we're done with the infrastructure, and we're done with the schools, then we can work on the inequality stuff. Although, the schools are working pretty good, and people are gainfully employed.
Should be okay.
The inequality thing will kind of probably slough off just a little bit. Let me tell you about True Car, man. You want to buy new, you want to buy used. 700,000 pre-owned vehicles from over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. Whatever you're looking to do, you get upfront pricing, you get discounts off of the list price, you get a better buying experience, you find out what other people are paying, and you get the fair price, and you connect with your local certified dealer. And you lock in your price, and you get your certificate, and you march it on down to the True Car certified dealer, and you pick up your ride. Our own Chris Max Pata did that with his Prius over here. And you can do that with any car you want. So when it's time to go, and you want to go new, or you want to go used, you go to True Car. Why would you do it any other way? Look, cars aren't free. You just don't want to get ripped off. You want to find out what everyone's paying. Fair market value. Go pick up your car. It is True Car. Some features not available in all states. All right, Gina Graham, what else we got?
Well, I thought of Neil deGrasse Tyson when I saw this story, so why don't we do it anyway? Uber signed a deal with NASA to develop a flying car project that could take off in some big cities as early as 2020. The ride-sharing service announced at a tech conference in Portugal that it has signed a Space Act agreement with NASA with the goal of creating vertical takeoff and landing vehicles that will fly at low altitudes. The service will be called Uber Elevate. The company wants to try the project in several cities by 2020 and have it up and running in time for the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles.
I love it. I love it when companies innovate. I love it when they want to make money and we want them to make money. And I love Uber as a metaphor of sort of the government and they're cab badges and having to buy a badge for $100,000 and then certify your car. I just love it when they just get the hell out of the way and let the guy with $20 and needs to get to the airport hook up with the dude with the Camry who wants the $20 and is willing to take him to the airport. Yeah. I'm so there with that. And as far as I think it's a, you know, if you really think about it, like, it's like, but who's going to regulate this? Who's going to regulate? Because first off, this notion of who's going to regulate it, what does that mean?
Yeah.
What does it mean? Who's going to regulate it? Why do you get to regulate it? Number one. Right. And then number two, who says everything needs to be regulated? You're not your marriage isn't regulated. Your relationship with your kids is not regulated. When you get behind the wheel of a car, and it's not regulated when you have a couple of drinks and watch TV or get in the shower, decide I'm going to go in a jacuzzi with a cocktail. Like, what's regulated? What's regulated? You have prescription medications in your home. You may have a pistol in your home. You may have tequila in your home. Who's making sure you don't take a bottle of pills, wash it down with a fifth of tequila, and then start waving the gun around? You regulate you. And who regulates my relationship with Nate over at the other shop or Tom who's working on the car? We have to regulate our own relationships. There's things they want. There's things I want. We have to regulate these things. And they go, Well, some junkie pulls up in a Hyundai that's on fire. You go, okay, counting on that happening. But first off,
give him a bad rating.
Things can go wrong in taxi cabs. Mm-hmm. There are people that can show up and have a stroke behind the wheel or be criminals or what have you and get in accidents, whatever that is. I think we've all just kind of agreed that we like this Uber thing, and we'll take our chances. Mm-hmm. How about this?
Yeah.
I'll regulate.
It's on them, too. The Ubers or the Lyfts of the world want to stay in business. It's in their best interest not to have some sort of screening process, to regulate themselves, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, what's to stop these guys from running over infants and using a pitchfork to fill up the trunk of the car? It's like, well, they'll probably be out of business. I think they'll be out of business pretty quick. So I love the Ubers. I love the innovation, and I love just get out, let them pay if they want to get to the airport faster, they want to fly, they want to drive, they want to Uber, whatever it is. Let's just do it, and then we'll all just benefit from it.
Yeah.
All right, one more.
All right. Well, Forbes magazine tabulated the highest paid TV hosts, and I can give you the power rankings, but I'm
happy
to have you guess.
All right.
Oh, God.
I'm going to be angry. The whole Judge Judy thing's already makes me angry.
Oh, I'm only thinking late night.
Should
I be casting a wide net in my mind with
I'm not calling her a host, but I
she is on the list.
I'm already angry. I'm angry at those who do nothing.
$900,000 per workday.
At those
for Judge Judy.
Right. For no duh stuff all day long. Listen, mister. If you're okay, but you agreed to pay half of the cleaning deposit, that's $283, and you never did get it back, and you moved home, and you took his stereo system with you, you're going to have to return that and the $283 next case. But don't you feel like any of us could do that goddamn job?
That's required a lot of expertise.
I just feel like any of us could do it. And whatever joke she makes or quips or whatever, sassy, whatever, that's all just old stuff that could be bought in a book from the 50s.
I'd much like to see you host at one of those, by the way. I don't know if you have to be a real judge, but I would like to see
I want to do a show called You Can't Judge. And I'm just going to sit there and judge everybody. Now, the guy I'm going to be probably most angry at is, if I find out Drew Carey's making a ton of dough, because I have my list. I have a power rankings of like funny and getting paid and unfunny and getting paid. Drew Carey's in there with the folks that are the least funny that have been paid the most over like a 30-year career.
Okay.
Not a bad guy, not an unfunny guy, but if you got paid for just how funny you were, he'd just be getting by.
Well, the good news is for you, he did not make the list.
Oh, good.
Does Oprah still have a show?
No. Well, she's doing stuff with 60 Minutes now. Okay. She's not on the list.
Ellen is my guess for number one.
Okay. Do you have a guess for number one?
I hope it's not Ellen. Jesus Christ.
This is per year, I assume?
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If we're open to the Dr. Phils and the Judge Judys and all that of the world, I can't think of anyone who makes more. I mean, Oprah's a Judge Judy. We're going to get angry because it's going to be somebody from The Voice or something like that. We're going to find out it's making a ton of dough.
I have an Ellen Phil Seacrest.
Interesting.
Seacrest, like,
oh, Seacrest.
Yeah, he made the list.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going Judge Judy.
Okay, well, Brian, you're really tapped into the heart of this. Those are the top three, not in that order.
Okay.
Ryan Seacrest comes in at third. He earns $58 million a year with the Kelly Ripa stuff, and he produces Keeping Up with the Kardashians, 100 other things. Ellen, number two, at $77 million a year.
But wait a minute. Don't we hate women and lesbians? How is she overcoming this deficit?
Yeah. I think
she must be super extra talented to overcome this deficit.
Oh, and she also signed with L'Oreal or something, so I'm sure they're going to bump that up for next year.
Number one is Phil?
Number one, Dr. Phil took home $79 million last year.
God. What is it about not saying anything that gets you rich?
You're doing it wrong, buddy. You say a lot.
Yeah, let's try this. You throw a news story out at me.
Well, Mariah Carey has undergone gastric sleeve surgery to lose some weight.
Huh. Well, there you go.
The Grammy winner, who showed off a slimmer figure at her hand and footprint ceremony at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood, she underwent the surgery about 6 weeks ago.
Oh, good for her. That's something.
Her rep would not comment on the surgery.
Well, I guess it takes all kinds, right?
Another part of the singer's new beginning is wrapping up her Las Vegas residency at Caesars and moving the show to the Venetian in 2018.
Hmm. Both in Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably. Probably could walk from one to the next now that she's lost all that weight. God bless her. Yeah.
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 Finally learned, aren't you?
Now you get it.
Now you get it.
Okay, where's the money? Where's the money? Because Seacrest just doesn't say anything, right? Is that his whole thing? Like, I get the hosting part. That's something. I get the producing part. But do we need him sitting next to Kelly Ripa saying nothing?
Yeah.
And commenting, also,
ironically,
if you're going to bring up news stories and then not say anything, why do we need you? I got a goddamn potted plant I could set next to, or a waste paper basket. Or paperweight, right? Yeah. Can I just have other things sit next to you?
Yeah.
And simply not talk?
Audibly words are coming out of his mouth, but nothing that ever, no one ever said. Do you ever hear what Ryan Seacrest said about this or that?
That doesn't happen.
So you just get rich by just going right down the middle.
Right. Upset us, if
you're Ellen, you pretend you're nice, you pretend to like to dance, you pretend to care, and you get paid. If you're Dr. Phil, you pretend to have ideas that are just platitudes, and you pretend to care, and you go right down the middle. And if you're Ryan Seacrest, you just say nothing ever, and you just get rich. That's it.
That's the plan, man.
Jesus Christ.
What a gig. Do you want to be angry for a little bit more?
Yeah, give us the rest of the list. Yeah.
So after Seacrest comes Judge Judy, makes $47 million a year. Simon Cowell, $45 million right behind her. Steve Harvey got a combined $42 million for his talk show and hosting Family Feud. And bringing up the rear together, Michael Strahan and Heidi Klum.
I know.
At $21 million.
I like Strahan, but Klum is such a zero. Oh, I have a prediction, by the way. When I was saying to someone, this goddamn Project Runway, does it need to be nominated for an Emmy every single year? How many Emmys has goddamn Project Runway been? Hold on, I forgot my new money-making plan. Hey, Gary, good for Project Runway. Good on them. Okay. Find out how many Emmys they've been nominated for, and then find out how many Heidi Klum has been nominated for. She sits there. She doesn't even, I don't even understand what she's saying. Yeah. She's a goddamn zero on that show. And then here's my prediction. I think Weinstein was sort of championing that show. I think that was one of their shows.
Oh.
I think he was going to bat for that show. See if you can find that out, Gary, because if he goes into the hole, no more Emmys for Project Runway.
The brothers are producers on that show.
It's got to be part of a campaign because that show's a goddamn. Because when you sit around and you're confused, like when you say to yourself, God, I hate Passion by Rod Stewart, and I hate Hot Legs, and I hate all the horrible songs that Rod Stewart writes, and then you go, but First Cutting's the deepest. I like that song. I like that song a lot. Why is it I like that one song? And then someone goes, Cat Stevens wrote that song, and you go, I got it now. And so when you sit around and you go, Project Runway, every single Emmys, there's just multiple Emmys, and it's like, I've seen episodes of that show. It's fine. It's nothing great. She's a goddamn zero on that goddamn show. And then you realize, oh, but the Weinsteins are out there
pushing it along,
filibustering and campaigning and pushing it along.
44 nominations and wins.
Wow.
Combination. There are 44 nominations, and that includes all the times they won and lost.
It's got to be a Weinstein campaign. Yeah. What do we got? You go, who's got more? MASH? Oh no. All in the Family? No. The Simpsons? No.
Tenfold.
Project Runway. Please. That's just this town is so goddamn political, and that's all that is. That's the Weinsteins out shoving it. Goddamn. Oh, she's such a goddamn zero.
There's a silver lining for this whole Weinstein thing.
Ugh.
Project Runway's run is come to an end.
No more
she
make
is
it work.
Such a zero. She's so bad. I mean, look, I don't mind her being bad. She's a hot chick who's bad. Does she need to get nominated every year as a host? I mean, there's people out there. There's the Colberts and the Kimmels and the Fallons, and everyone's like
busting their ass.
I mean, look, John Oliver and guys like that. Yeah, you go. Oh, hey, he gets nominated. He busts his ass. These guys are dancing their ass off. She sits there and says nothing.
Yeah, and on
and I don't even understand what she's saying. It's insane. What does she get nominated? Well, who else is in her category, Gary, for host? She's such a zero. All right, let me put myself in a better mood. Tommy John. Oh, man, do I love me some Tommy John. I am telling you, all right, the summer's drawing to an end, but, man, you still don't want those underpants riding up on you. You still get a little heat going down there. You still got sticky situations. 21st century men's underwear, they're the best. I've switched to ultralight, breathable fabrics, move with you, not against you. You'll never go back. That's it. Once you go to Tommy John, that's it. No riding up. It's impossible to get a wedgie. Plus, they have the time-saving horizontal quick draw pocket, socks that stay up, that undershirts are the best. I'm actually wearing a Tommy John t-shirt right now. Not the undershirt, but like the t-shirt. Everything is better. It's all better with Tommy John. It's backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free, guarantee. It is just the best. We all have it here. Again, you'll never go back. And if you are riding a bike or taking a walk or going to the gym, running on that treadmill, you get those Tommy John underpants going, man. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. Dawson.
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam to get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
All right. What do you got?
Would you just like the most recent year, or is there a particular year?
I don't know. Whatever's going to make me the most angry.
Let's see here.
44.
Maybe give us some of the highlights of people she's beaten out for best host.
Or just who's in her category. Mm-hmm. 44 nominations and wins.
Let's just go with this most recent award season. She was up against Alec Baldwin for Match Game. Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg.
Liar.
Gordon Ramsay. W. Kamau Bell. And the winner that year was RuPaul.
I'm back on
that's
board.
Another affirmative action job, but either way.
In past years, you see a lot of Jane Lynch, Tom Bergeron, Anthony Bourdain, Betty White.
Here's the whole thing. Heidi Klum doesn't do anything. Alec Baldwin, I've done the show. He has to go out and do something. She doesn't do anything. That's got to be Weinstein, right? That's got to be the Weinsteins. Are they just giving the booger sugar? Is it payola? Is he trying to bang her? Like, what's going on that this nothing that doesn't say anything ever just gets a perennial all-star just nominated every year? Like, how many years is this?
The inception of the award was 2007, and it appears there was only one year where she wasn't nominated.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
What a run.
She barely speaks English. What is up? Okay.
It's crazy that she and Bourdain are in the same category, too, because he's like this loquacious guy who talks. It's just him the entire time going on around the world and sharing insights to life, and he's witty and smart.
She shows up and says, "You are out."
And she's one of like three or four people. Yeah. Or, I mean,
she doesn't. She does nothing. She shouldn't be nominated ever for anything. She does nothing. She's a zero. Ah, you wait and see what happens when the Weinsteins go in the joint. Good. They throw the book at them. Now I'm really mad.
Oh, man.
The rape thing upset me, but this really...
This is where you're talking.
All right, one more.
All right. Well, being a former leader of the free world isn't enough to get Barack Obama out of jury duty. The former president showed up at a Cook County court in Chicago on Wednesday to report. He arrived with his Secret Service detail and joined the rest of the prospective jury pool sitting there. He's not the first president called for jury duty after leaving the White House. George W. Bush was called in 2015, and Bill Clinton was also called to serve after he left office. Nobody gets out. Got to do it.
Yeah, but he'll never get on, right?
What if he got on a jury? I doubt anyone, any of these guys have ever gone on a jury.
But you put him on just to have him on, right?
It'd be fun.
I guess.
Waste their time for 8 days.
Like Garrigo says, the most important part of the whole process.
I mean, not waste their time.
But doesn't the defense, isn't the defense going to shy away from anyone who might be a strong leader?
I am going to say...
Whatever you say, Barack.
That this is probably... You know, it's probably not murder one. It's probably like somebody stole a car or something.
Petty larceny.
And your life's pretty boring defending a bunch of like medium to small time juvie, you know, criminals. And this would be a pretty fun day
awesome
for
story.
You.
Yeah. Sure.
I would imagine that if you said he's making the cut, we got him on the jury. I imagine somebody would intervene and go, look. Secret Service is going to have to show up all day, every day. This is going to cost X amount, and we cannot facilitate these extra bodies. You're also bringing a possible danger to whatever. I think somebody would kind of quietly talk them out of it or explain to them they should make another decision.
Well, and also, he's a law professor. Isn't this
he's
for the rest of us?
Everyone yeah, exactly. Judge.
Well, there's a great film called Welcome to Mooseport.
That's right.
It wasn't exactly this story, but it was an ex-president who... Okay.
Gene Hackman's last role.
Oh, wow.
That movie will pop up every once in a while, and I'll think, really? Can't show the hammer.
I know.
We gotta watch Ray Romano.
Not a great film.
One more time, and Welcome to Mooseport. Just can't run a Paul Newman doc in that place. Nope. Gotta watch Welcome to Mooseport.
Yes.
That's the world we live in.
Oh, all man. Right. Wait, real quick. Breaking. The Welcome to Mooseport Rotten Tomatoes score is 13%.
It's not that bad.
Well,
right.
The audience does have it at 19. You're right, Brian.
I got a movie that stars Paul Newman that's at 100%. So why not that? Answer is, can't be done. We got to give Heidi Klum another Emmy.
That's right.
And we can't show your movie. All right. Let me tell you, we're bringing it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. I'm proud to be a Merkin. Gina
Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Oh, Geico, man. Everybody's got the to-do list. How about you add this to your to-do list? Save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, and you don't have to go anywhere. You just go over to your computer, go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Put a little extra money in your pocket. And go out and get that Merkin you've been eyeballing all these years in the window over there at the Merkin Emporium. Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes. Could be saving 15% or more on your car insurance at Geico. Save some money, man. This Sunday, come out and see us. Oxnard Levity Live is,
We made an adjustment.
Oh, we made an adjustment. There is no Doug Benson?
Appears not.
Oh, all right. Well, screw Doug Benson. You got me.
That's all you need.
And November 21st, you go to Pasadena Ice House. Oh, Mark Garagos is going to be up on stage there. That's going to be fun. Go to Corolla Drink, say hi to Lynette, and get a little merch over at AdamCarolla.com. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Neil deGrasse Tyson, Gina Grad, and Paul Bryan. Say mahalo.
If you think the cost of education is high, try the cost of ignorance.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. We'll see you Sunday night in Oxnard. And the Tuesday before Thanksgiving in Pasadena. Get your tickets now at AdamCarolla.com.